Back now to Dr. Malachi Martin. Doctor, are you there?
Of course I am.
Good. Good.
Listen to everything. I'm fascinated.
Doctor, is there now or is there going to be an Antichrist?
Whether there is now is a question. There is going to be an Antichrist, and I think the best thing we can do is talk about his public appearance.
All right.
Because he may already be in existence. For me to say he is in existence would immediately provoke the questions, where is he and what is he doing?
Yes.
And I want to avoid that.
Yes.
But he will be manifest publicly within a reasonable amount of time. Most people who are 20-something or 30-something will come across Antichrist in their life. I'm 76. I may not.
How will we know him?
We will know him by two main qualities. First of all, he will arrive at a time when we as a race have what looks like insuperable problems. Supposing we discover we have insuperable, really insuperable environmental problems.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Supposing we find we have insuperable health problems, a disease.
Yes,
wasting,
sir.
Wasting nation after nation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. He will have solutions for those problems. He will have wise solutions. Solutions that are real solutions. And number two, the results of his solutions will be such that people will say, "You must be God," and he will accept that attribute.
He will accept that.
Yes, he will accept that. That will be those are the three marks of the Antichrist.
Well, you've already done it to me. You're already giving me chills. I've been a talk show host, doctor, for about, in this incarnation, 13 years.
That's a long time, doing
this program. And in the last several years, doctor, I've begun to observe something that I just picked a word and I began to call it the quickening.
It's a very good word, Art.
it's
a very discerning word. You must speak from experience.
Well,
you must.
I speak from watching the news of what man is doing by the day.
Yes.
Doctor, and by this quickening, I mean socially, I'm watching these horrible things happening. Yesterday is just an example. In Sacramento, a man was holed up and killed his two children in front of his wife, and then in front of his wife killed himself. This kind of senseless, mindless...
I know.
Unbelievable behavior socially.
And it's not isolated, my God.
I know, it's not isolated. Politically, doctor, I look around and I see no sense to what is going on. We have lost our way.
We have lost our way, there's no doubt about that. Could I stick in something at this moment, Art? Could I make a remark?
You may indeed.
There is, in Scripture and in tradition... And by the way, I'm a Roman Catholic, so I'm not sort of dependent on the Bible as Protestants are, and that's their choice. But there is a thing called the mystery of iniquity, and it's a very constant teaching of the Bible and of religious men and women, and it's this, that evil is allowed from time to time to so dull the senses of men and women and to so disturb the equilibrium of their minds that they do crazy, real crazy, mad, bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And here is the point that gives me a chill. I'm 76, and I noticed that in the last 20, 25 years of my life, the incidence of such disequilibrium, the incidence of that seemed to be much more frequent than when I was younger.
Yes.
Much more, there are much more shocking things happen, and it's not that we're getting to know them. No. The world was connected at that time. Communications were slower when I was young, say when I was 25, or when I was 20. But all the news got around. But we never heard such a plethora of shocking, unbelievably violent, unnatural happenings to ordinary people. So the mystery of iniquity seems to be pressuring, and the idea in the teaching about the mystery of iniquity is that there is a darkness, an immense darkness that closes in and makes ordinary people do the most extraordinary and shocking things.
Well, that's one part of it, a horrible, scary part of it, but also you mentioned the environment.
Yeah.
I've been monitoring stories lately, Doctor, about the ozone, about deformed frogs, which are said to be an indicator species. I have had people on from various disciplines that you may not agree with who call themselves remote viewers, to prophets, to Native Americans, and frankly, they all tell a very similar story with regard to what they think is immediately in front of us in the next few years.
I happen to agree with them. I happen to even have gone further in my thought than merely agreeing with them. I think there is a case of radiation. I think that we are being radiated in such a way that it distorts the chemical balance of our system, our mental system. And that slowly but surely, a vast section of the public is being dulled, doesn't see what's happening.
Yes.
Doesn't realize what is being done to them.
The slowly boiling frog.
That's right. I mean, the frogs thereby, there was one one example of a frog reported here in all our papers in North America, of a frog with one eye in its head and the other in its mouth.
Yes, I know.
The distortion, the complete ruination of nature.
I'm afraid I can tell you more, Father. From the north central part of the United States, across to Vermont, to Montreal, even in Japan now,
yes.
Deformed frogs with 4 to 6 legs, as you pointed out, eyes in throats, missing eyes, and I could go on and on. Horrible,
I know.
Horrible
I know.
Deformities. Something's happening.
Well, and then, by the way, we should also add things we are not told in public. The deformed babies that are born in a section of Europe, which is also covered by the Chernobyl explosion, but also simply happening, deformations of adults as well as children. And they're not reported widely.
Doctor, a report 2 days ago from London of an abnormal amount of deformed fetuses in Britain. Britain is experiencing more radiation, ultraviolet radiation, as a result of depletion of the ozone right now than
sure.
are we.
Sure, sure. Then, by the way, there's a thing goes, we're touching a sacred cow when we touch on it, and that's nuclear energy.
Yes, sir.
I'm firmly convinced from the evidence that, and the evidence by reputable scientists, these are not crackpots. They're men who have engaged in Nobel prize activities in chemistry and in physiology and economics, and they can point out the effect of radiation on the human frame, especially on those parts of the brain that deal with moral and ethical judgment. And it's a bit frightening because it means that the rise in criminality, the distinct rise in criminality,
mm-hmm.
recidivism, constant crime and doing, and horrible crimes with no reason at all but simply cruelty, is some deformation of nature in itself. And I'm afraid it's on the increase, not on the decrease.
Is it reasonable to ask you what, when a human being is possessed by a
yes.
demon, what is the purpose of the possession of an individual?
The destruction of that individual's soul to such a point that it must end up in hell. Hell being a place, a location, an existence which is totally separate from God. The belief is that everybody was created to be happy forever, and God wants everybody to enjoy heaven, the joys of heaven, the perpetuity of heaven, the peace of heaven, and the ecstasy of heaven. the demons excluded from that and barred from it because of their rebellion, want to make sure that as many human beings as possible don't attain it. And that is done by possession. And possession is a funny thing. It's a funny operation. It never starts suddenly. You don't wake up in the morning and say, gee whiz, I'm possessed. You know, it doesn't happen like that. It's like any addiction. It's like anything that happens slowly. It's bit by bit. Bit by bit, I cede control of my will and my intellect to a demon. And one day, the possession is complete.
Is this a fight, Doctor, between an individual's will and that of the demon?
Well, usually, to be more accurate, it's a fight between the will of the exorcist and the will of the demon.
Well, I guess I meant before you or somebody like yourself has met up with this possessed individual.
Yes.
As the process of takeover is underway,
yes.
Is it a fight between the person's...
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Between the person's will and the demon intending to possess. Usually the tendency or the attempt to possess is through deception. For instance, we have in the northeast corner of America... since 1975, we've had a huge increase in the following type of possession. A young man, say 30-something, 40-something, a young woman, will come and say, look, when I was in college, when I was studying, when I took up a residence as a doctor, a lawyer, whatever it was, I made a pact with the devil. I needed money. I needed a position. And I asked him to help me, and he did, but he took over my will and my mind. Now I want to get rid of it. How do I get rid of it?
Well,
we have an increase in that phenomenon, which I never thought we had. Some of them don't even believe in God. Some of them are Jewish, some of them are Buddhist, some of them are Christian. Some of them are Protestants or Catholics. There's no profile of the possessible person.
Once you have issued such an invitation, is there any way to go back?
If it has been taken up, then
yes.
Your only recourse is exorcism, that we know of. There may be other recourses. We don't know of any recourse except that.
Are there cases in which a possession is not obvious?
Yes, there are.
I would imagine there are many where the spirit has simply won and is in firm control. I would think that the people who come to you are those who are sort of in the middle of a giant battle.
That's right. When you find some, you know, the typical things of somebody throwing themselves on the ground or cursing and spitting and protesting and defecating, urinating and all sorts of protest. What they're doing is protesting, saying, help me.
Yes.
Help me. The perfectly possessed, we call them the perfectly possessed, are those that are completely at peace. And I've known several of the perfectly possessed and I avoid them like the pest. And you know them only by almost accidental means. Sometimes they're perfectly normal, by the way, and they've got great business property, they're married, they have children and wives, and they put down responsible jobs. There's nothing wrong there. Now and again, just now and again, it's as it were, a veil is drawn aside, and you see somebody you don't know at all. You just don't know this person, this man, this woman. And there's a completely alien look, a completely alien attitude, and they breathe alienation. And you know then, if you have a nose for it, you know then that they're perfectly possessed and there's nothing to be done about it. The first man I knew like that was called Beedham, John Beedham. And it was a frightening experience because I had known him for years.
In other words, their pact, their deal... They are at peace with and comfortable with
their deal. That's right. And they have passed through the usual Satanist rituals too. The three Satanist rituals, the power of inflicting pain, the power of hating, and the power of burning fire. Fire is part of the Satanist and the Luciferian development. And they've passed through all those with flying colors.
Doctor, I want to circle back for a second.
Sure.
You scared me quite well. You said, and this was going to be a major question for you this morning.
Yes.
I talked to you about the quickening.
Yes.
I didn't even get to all the facets. To me, it's many, many things. But you said there was a huge increase
Yes.
In the number of possessions, and I was going to ask you that, to me that just adds to the pile. That is true. There's more now?
It's about, since 1975, when I really started in earnest exorcisms in the United States, it's about 800% increase in frequency.
Oh,
in
my.
In frequency. And it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. And one part of the phenomenon is this, Art, that now, for the first time, exorcists and psychiatrists are working closely together. And I work with psychiatrists. I do the spiritual side of it, and they do the psychiatric end of it. There's always a psychiatric preparation and follow-up on after an exorcism.
You mentioned that one psychiatrist simply gave up psychiatry.
That's right. This I gave him a code name of Hammond. That's not his real name. But uh-huh. He was very, very skeptical about it all. And finally I said, okay, doctor, look, if you insist, but you must have some protection. He wasn't a Catholic, by the way. But he was a very honest, sincere man. I didn't mean but. He was. And once he went through it, that was it. He would never touch another possessed person. He would never touch psychiatry ever again. He went off and did something else. He was a qualified doctor and became an ordinary MD. And confined himself to that.
Doctor, how frequently do you think psychiatrists who are treating patients, or what percentage of their patients might indeed, instead of suffering psychiatric problems, be suffering some form of possession?
Well over 50% of the cases I have observed.
Wow.
Well over 50% are really possessed by demons, and of course nothing can be done about it. They're diagnosed as schizophrenic or as MPDs or as whatever, and there's no sucker for them. There is no sucker or help for them at all.
When you have done your job, and when we come back from the top of the hour, we'll talk about what an actual exorcism is like. I guess
yes.
I want to know. But when you have done your job,
yes,
and it's all over, and the demon leaves,
yes,
where does that demon go?
Well, let me gently but firmly sort of put in a corrective there, Art, from the point of view of an expert. The demon has been deprived of a place, a location, a human person, in which to exercise power. Therefore, they're confined to where they originally were, which is a hell, which is hell. They go back merely to suffering, because their suffering is intense and perpetual and non-stop. They have had a chance of exercising power outside of their tortures, and indeed, the evil they inflict is a way of their getting their own back in some way or other, even though it doesn't relieve their pain.
So they are punished for their failure.
That's right, they're punished. And that's why in the Gospel, for instance, you have this the evil spirit saying to Jesus, no, don't send us back to hell. Send us into these pigs. Do you remember the swine of Gerasene?
Yes.
And they rushed over the precipice into the water and drowned themselves. They could possess something. There's a sort of relief, a temporary relief in not being condemned purely and simply to suffer in hell. And therefore they want something to inhabit. And Christ himself said that, and St. Paul says, and St. Peter, and lots of things in the New Testament say that the devil goes around seeking whom he may devour, like a lion, whom he may possess. And I must tell you that the enormous increase, about 800% over what it used to be, in our small area, because it's only a small area we do, the northeast corner, and it is a huge increase. And here's one more thing to say, Art, which may sort of provoke a whole series of questions. Possession of the real diabolic kind is generational.
Generational?
Uh-huh. It's generational.
Passed on.
It's passed on by training. And it's a dreadful thing when somebody comes in with perfectly respectable, good, normal American families, and they have reared their children to be Satanists and to accept possession, and they would, unless they're stopped themselves, pass it on to their children. And it's been going on for well over 200 years.
All right, Doctor, hold it right there. Relax, you've got 8 or 9 minutes. I need 8 or 9 minutes after this.
Uh-huh.
And we'll be right back. And when we come back, we will ask you about that, and we will ask you about an actual exorcism. Dr. Malachi Martin is my guest. And I think I'm glad we're taking a break. We're going to do that right now. We'll be back with more. You're listening to the American CBC Radio Network.